Mr. President, Mr. Colson, and then Mr. Ziegler watching.
All right.
The National Archives released another batch of taped conversations and 78,000 pages of documents from the Nixon presidency this week. Many familiar names appear between the president himself, H.R. Haldeman, Charles Colson, and Billy Graham. A few names that would become even more famous, including Donald Rumsfeld and even a very young Karl Rove, are also in there. Stanley Cutler is a historian and professor of law at the University of Wisconsin. His 1992 lawsuit against the National Archives led to the release of the Nixon materials. He joins us from member station WHA in Madison. Professor Cutler, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
You've been steeped in this presidency for decades. What did you notice from these newly released tapes and documents?
Well, what we see clearly is Nixon's emphasis and concern with a, quote, new majority, one that will be composed of more conservative people, ethnics, Catholics, whites predominantly. Mm-hmm. He does, however, he's still interested in reaching out to blacks. He sees this as his new majority.
I want to listen to a tape of a phone conversation that's been released, and okay. We'll stipulate that a lot of the phone conversations are just more audible than the meetings in the Oval Office. This is a conversation, November 19, 1972, so the president would have been just reelected.
Right.
About 20 minutes that he spends on the phone with one of his closest political advisors, Charles Colson.
You know, Scully sounds damn good for the UN. Well, Scully's articulate. But the man, he's articulate, but would he cut off? See, I want whoever goes to the UN to take our orders. Well, he'll take orders. But that whole staff up there is violently anti-Nixon.
Of course, that's just a portion. And John mm-hmm. Scalise was, in fact, appointed UN ambassador.
Right.
Don't politicians talk this way in both parties and all White Houses?
Oh, absolutely. I found conversation after conversation where Nixon and Haldeman and Ehrlichman are speculating on who's going to go where, what man will do this, and so forth. One of the funniest lines of conversation along that is when they're trying to find a place for George Bush. George H.W. Bush.
Right.
And it's like they talk about him as Undersecretary of the Treasury, of the Interior, Ambassador to India. It's absolutely uproarious. But they speculated on this all the time. This was Nixon's favorite kind of small talk.
I was struck, it's not from or even to Mr. Nixon, but a memorandum to John Mitchell, Attorney General, who became chairman of the president's reelection campaign, from Murray Schottner.
Oh, yes.
Old advisor of the president's, in which they take note of this young ex-GI named John Kerry, who had just testified in behalf of putting an end to the U.S. participation in the war in Vietnam before the Senate committee. And John Mitchell notes that he went to Yale. He's inclined towards the establishment. He has no use for Democrats as such, and says we ought to talk to him and see if he'd be interested in becoming a Republican.
Right. Some of Kerry's testimony was very hostile toward the administration and so forth. And indeed, he seemed like he would be good material for a Republican Party. Well, that didn't work out.
Professor Cutler, let me ask you a question I pass along from the mouths of one of our young staff members a few months ago.
Okay.
Some conversation came up about Richard Nixon, and she said, why do people make fun of Richard Nixon? He opened the door to China. Do attitudes towards Richard Nixon change with the generations?
Well, they, you know,
I mean, the generation who's coming of political maturity now sees his career stand out in maybe a different bold relief than someone who was there at the time would.
Fair enough. You say bold relief and you say China. But I know the way history is written and the way it turns out, in a century from now, Richard Nixon will be reduced to two or three lines, but certainly one of the lines in there will be that Richard Nixon was the first president to resign because of scandal. Now, you know, in a more detailed book, we will measure other days and other moments in his presidency, but Watergate is the spot that will not out.
Stanley Cutler, historian, law professor, and playwright at the University of Wisconsin, thanks very much for being with us.
You're welcome.